It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard around the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. And folks, you complain about the Democrats all you want to, but they were elected to run the House. This is just how they operate. When you look at the Schiff impeachment and Nancy Pelosi impeachment, this is just how they operate. So don't be surprised. They're not fair. They want to win at any cost. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about the Democrat voters. They just care about what they want to accomplish, period.
Well, Chuck, let's run through, so make sure everybody's on board.
Yeah.
What's happened is the House passed a bill for the impeachment investigation.
Right.
But they passed a bill that gave Adam Schiff unilateral power.
Right.
To decide who could testify, who cannot testify, and what questions can and cannot be asked.
Exactly.
The Republicans have now come forth. They've said, well, here's our list of witnesses. Adam Schiff immediately said, nope, you're not having any of
these
witnesses.
Shut them all down. So basically what we have here, Mark, and you're familiar with this, is a grand jury. You only get the prosecution side. You don't get any defense. So
but even in a grand jury, you have an indictment, and now there's a trial.
Well, yeah, but the trial comes with the Senate. So as I said to you earlier when we were talking off air, I was all for the Senate just coming out and saying, you know, shut this thing down. It's a complete fairy tale. It's a hoax. It's a scam. It's whatever you want to call it. But now it's got to the point where the Senate is the only place where you can open up all of these witnesses that need to come, the Hunter Bidens, the Nellie Orrs, the people like that who really need to come and testify before Congress. And the only place to do it is the Senate, and then they can expose how fraudulent, quite frankly, the House is and how completely one-sided it is. I mean, the Republicans aren't on this is like Obamacare. Only Democrats voted for it. So they've got it narrowed down to where only Democrats can speak. I mean, you know, we can cross-examine, but it's their witnesses, none of ours.
But we can't ask questions that Adam Schiff doesn't approve.
That's true, too. He can shut that down, so you don't have to answer that question. I mean, that's just complete and total control. This is like Soviet-style stuff. And I'm not – that's not hyperbole. It really is like a Soviet-style Marxist court.
So here's what I think's going on, buddy. I'm going to tell you. So first off, they haven't voted to impeach him because they still know that's going to hurt a lot of Democrat congresspeople in Republican areas. Mm-hmm. So they're afraid of that. But the big picture is, and let me remind people, Chuck Schumer came out this week and said he wants to sit down with Mitch McConnell and negotiate the Senate rules.
Yeah, right. They certainly didn't want to sit down with Devin Nunes and any of those guys to negotiate rules for the House, did they?
Absolutely. There was no negotiation on the House rules.
Right.
And I don't believe for a second that Chuck Schumer is going to negotiate on the Senate rules.
Well, you know, it's kind of down to Mitch McConnell, isn't it? And do we really trust Mitch McConnell? That's another thing I've said all along is, you know, there's a certain percentage of Republican senators who are never Trumpers who are fighting against the Trump. They really don't care about the Republican Party and whether they're in control or not. They just care about themselves.
See, and McConnell, I don't necessarily trust McConnell's going to always do what's best for the president.
Well, even for the country.
But McConnell, I believe, will always do what's best for McConnell.
Right.
And that's going to be holding on to his position.
Well, maybe that may be true. And the other side of that is McConnell has done one thing, and that is he has helped with the judiciary, the Democrats have always locked that down. They've had liberal Democrats all through the Ninth Circuit Court is just a joke. The most overturned court in the world. But when you have one party
judges through than any other president to this point.
I know. And that's got to really concern the Democrats. They don't like that at all.
But here's what I think. Here's what will happen. If this thing plays out, first off, if the House issues an indictment or a article of impeachment, mm-hmm. then it has to have a trial in the Senate.
Right.
All 100 senators. So here's the first thing. All 100 senators must be present at all times.
And the interesting part about this, Mark, is they're all going to be running for office.
Correct.
I mean, what they're going to be stuck in the Senate listening to this, you know, participating in this trial while their adversaries are out running against them.
So Biden, Buttigieg, and Yang are going to be out there going crazy. And who else, you know, possibly Bloomberg.
But well, there's nobody in the Senate that's running for the Democrat presidency, I think, that has a chance anyway.
But that takes Sanders off the campaign trail.
True.
That takes Elizabeth Warren off the campaign mm-hmm. trail, who's a front runner. That takes Kamala off. That takes Spartacus off.
Maybe this is what Bloomberg was thinking about when he decided to run. Exactly. I'm not going to have any opposition. I'll just go out there and run and spend all my money.
Just go against Biden. And that also takes Klobuchar out.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's true.
So here's what I think happens. The Senate could get the articles and say, this is crap. We're doing nothing. That is an option.
I don't believe they'll do that.
But if they hold a trial, McConnell is going to set 6 to 8 weeks aside for this trial. And he's going to set those 6 to 8 weeks aside right in the window of the Iowa caucus and Super Tuesday.
And you know what these Democrat senators will say? This is a joke anyway. It's a show trial. We don't need to be there.
They have to be.
Well, they don't have to be.
No, they have to be.
What do you mean? I mean, is there some law where they have to be in the Senate?
Yes.
Oh.
They must be present.
I've sat across the table a few times and met Judge Napolitano. He's a very nice guy. He's so screwed up over this thing with Trump.
I know.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
So here's the thing, Chuck. If they are not present for 100% of the testimony, then they are prohibited from casting a ballot, from voting.
Well, that's my point. They don't care about casting a ballot anyway because they know they're going to lose.
But that's 5 votes that they won't have to impeach. That makes it even more impossible to impeach him. Now, the next thing is going to happen.
I think you may be surprised at what they'll do.
The next thing is now the president's attorney will have the right to call witnesses and will have subpoena power.
Isn't that amazing that in the House, they don't even allow the president's attorney to be there?
Because it's the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
So now
stop just a minute. Let's go back in time. In every impeachment up to this point, that has never happened.
Well, every impeachment has been bipartisan. As Nancy Pelosi said, she would never consider articles of impeachment unless it became a bipartisan effort. She made that statement on TV.
Well, the only
and
person
now yeah. went forward with a 100% Democrats and 0 Republicans. So she broke her own commitment. Big surprise.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's who they are.
But think about this trial in the Senate. Hillary Clinton on trial. Obama possibly called. All of those deep state people called. Biden, Hunter Biden.
Clapper, Brennan.
They will all be on the stand, and they will all be under oath.
I was watching on Sunday. I know this isn't current, but last Sunday, I suppose, was last Sunday that Molly Hemingway was on Media Buzz with Howie Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally, after they discussed the whistleblower back and forth and all this kind of stuff, nobody could name him. He's Voldemort. And all of a sudden, she blurted out his name, which is Eric Camarella. Correct? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's what we understand it to
be. Eric Camarella. So she blurted it out right on air. Howie Kurtz, it took him 5 minutes of gulping and covering. And, I mean, he literally got the vapors. He was just, oh, my God, what have you done? Because apparently on Fox and all other networks, you are prohibited for saying, and I don't know whether there's going to be pushback on Molly Hemingway, but you're prohibited for saying his name, which I find, this is the key guy who started the whole thing, and all of a sudden he's unimportant, and yet you cannot mention his name.
He who shall not be mentioned.
Yeah, it was Voldemort.
And then there's a second person involved who's named after a Taco Bell meal.
Who's that?
What's Chalupa?
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Chalupa. Which I believe is a taco wrapped in a tortilla, isn't it?
I'm not big on Mexican food, so I can't
It's not that. Real Mexican food. It's Taco Bell food.
Yeah, well, whatever.
But, yeah, so then they've got the Taco Bell bandit in there with the chalupa. But
and why is that person? Is it a he or a she, Chalupa?
I thought Chalupa's a female, I believe.
Yeah, do you know why she is important?
Apparently, she's like the number two whistleblower. There's more than one whistleblower now.
Yeah, you know, I'm with Rush on this. I think that this is going to be just like this whole thing in the House, anyway, is going to be just exactly like what's his name's trial when he went up for I am old. I've turned into Joe Biden. I can't remember anything.
All right. Well, you're thinking of Corn Pop then.
No.
Corn Pop or Esther Williams?
No, no. I'm thinking of the Supreme Court, the justice.
Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh. Yeah, it's like going to be like the Kavanaugh hearing. It's going to be flood the zone. Just there are going to be so many people and so many accusations coming at that literally you won't be able to defend because there are just too many of them. So you can't defend against it. I think that's coming for sure.
Yeah, I actually think the House will ultimately decide not to impeach.
Really?
Yes.
Even if they have nothing? Because they don't. They don't have anything.
Well, that's the problem. They have nothing.
I know, but really?
I don't think they want to risk the Senate trial.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, because, I mean, Schiff's running around saying they got all kinds of stuff on him. So, you know.
Remember, Schiff had the proof of Russian collusion, too.
I know. But I listen to MSNBC and I watch CNN. I watch them all just to and I listen to their panels. And, oh, they're just so cocksure of themselves. They've got this and they've got that. You couldn't do this. And Trump's done that. And he's a horrible person. And he doesn't follow the Constitution as if they knew. And so I'd be very surprised if they don't do that because their base is depending on that.
I don't think
the base of the Democrat Party is what's driving this.
I think they will go right up to the line. They will say he's criminal. He's this. He's that. He's Hitler. He's a Nazi.
And they're going to settle all that.
But they're going to say that they're just short of being able to convict or be able to prove.
Because that's an interesting prediction.
Chuck, I don't believe they want to go through a Senate trial because think about what's going
to
come out.
They'll be exposed. I mean, and then on top of that, I've gotten gray and old waiting for Horowitz to come out with the IG report. It's coming out this week, this month, this day, it never happens. That's been since May. So when that stuff comes out, here's a question I have to ask myself. So the Horowitz IG report comes out and it's damning. And he says, you know, you should indict these people, whoever he decides they should indict. He can't do anything, but he can suggest indictment. Then what? Do they really indict them? Do they really bring them in for trial? Do they really do this stuff? Or do they back off and just like Washington does always, right up to the brink and then no?
Well, Adam Schiff says that he will not recognize any of these reports coming out.
Well, fine. I mean, they don't. Well, I can understand.
Well, it makes sense because
they don't recognize the truth anyway. Right. They don't want the truth. They don't. I don't care one way or the other. I really don't. I would hope that Trump is exonerated and all that. I would hope that. But if he's guilty of something, then fine. I'll live with it. But I would just like to deal with the truth for once.
I think if Horowitz comes back and says that the following people should be indicted, I think you will see Bill Barr go do it.
Well, Durham is the fly in the ointment for the Democrats.
Right. And he'll do it through Durham. But
right.
But I think it'll happen. Hey, Chuck, can I interrupt the show for a minute?
Absolutely not.
All right. Well, I've already done it.
You have. Have your way with me. Go ahead.
I want to thank people. We just opened up our own Patreon page. Now, to remind people what's going on here.
Tell me what that is, because I'm not really familiar with it. Is it like standing on a corner with a tin cup or what?
But digitally.
Okay. Wow. I've come a long way in the world.
So what it is, Chuck, as I've said before, Media Matters and the left has been going after all of our advertisers.
Oh, I know.
And they go after everybody's advertisers.
Right.
So we're not the only program doing this. The Rubin Report now does this. And what we've done is we've asked our listeners to help.
We're really asking them to support us monetarily, right? To send some money in so we can stay on the air and actually talk to people every week.
Exactly.
And again, how embarrassing to have to resort to that. I'm so sorry, folks, but I mean, I guess we have to depend on you to actually keep us on the air, because the left is just so strong about, they just pillar these advertisements.
They want us gone.
We're going to have to be doing Relief Factor or something pretty soon.
Well, the bottom line is, you know, here's what it amounts to. Some of our audience has already gone to Patreon. The way you do it, Chuck, is you go to bluntforcetruth.com.
Yeah.
You'll see a button there for, you know, contribute at Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
You open up an account at Patreon, and some people, we've got people that are, you know, giving $5 a month. We've got people giving $20 a month. God bless them. I'm
That's
so
great.
Grateful
yeah,
for
no
that.
Kidding.
And I want people to understand, this money goes to the staff. It's not going to Chuck and I.
No. It's to keep the program on the air, because it's not inexpensive, and we require a certain amount of staff in order to do it.
Right. So it's only to pay for the staff and for the cost of putting the show out. But folks, if you want to support the show, if you want to keep the show on the air, I would ask you to join up with other people that are. Go to bluntforcetruth.com, look for the Patreon button, click on, it'll take a minute. And we would just, you know, be very grateful. And we love the people that are supporting us. We love you for doing it. And we love the people that are about to.
Absolutely. This is what I do in my old age.
All right, let's get back to the show.
All right.
Well, Chuck, we got a great guest today. So why don't we move on to that?
All righty. I'm ready.
All right. On Blunt Force Truth today, we have Giano Caldwell. He is an author. He's the author of the book, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed.
And Isn't he a Fox News contributor as well?
And a Fox News contributor.
Yeah.
And a native Chicagoan, too, I believe.
Native Chicagoan. Well, we're happy to have you, Giano. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And of all days, too, my book, Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed, is out and on sale right now. So I'm very excited to discuss that and any other issues with you guys.
Well, we're going to sell some books today.
So, John,
listen, we here.
You know, there is a movement within the African-American community that is starting to move toward, I wouldn't say necessarily toward conservatism, but certainly moving toward Trump and for the Republican Party, which is got to be troubling to the Democrats to no end. And anyone who stands up for that, as you and so many others are just basically going to be, not to coin a phrase, but blacklisted by the Democrat Party and really, you know, pillared and piled on. How's it going with that? Or do you probably don't care? You know, which is the greatest thing that Trump always said. He said, you know, I don't care. I don't care what they say about me. And, of course, the Republicans always do care, unfortunately, in the Senate and the Congress. They care about everything that people say about them. And you must be one of those people that just don't care.
You know what? My very dear friend that I've never met or talked to or communicated with in his life, Kanye West.
Right.
Has really been pushing this cultural movement.
He has.
Towards conservatism, actually. It's not even just about Trump. It's hey, you've been voting for Democrat for all these years, and they've not mm-hmm. done anything for you.
Well, they've given you a lot of lip service, but they haven't done anything.
Right. They speak very nicely, but they don't accomplish much. Let's be very clear and honest about that. When I think about what President Trump has done, for America, exactly. Not just the African-American community, but we'll start there. We think about the First Step Act. Thousands of people released from jail, 90% of them being African-American. Opportunity zones, thousands of opportunity zones, mostly in these black marginalized areas. The lowest unemployment rate for African-Americans on record. Jail reform and the continuation of it. You know, this president I think has been the most impactful from a policy standpoint of any president in my lifetime.
I think you're absolutely right, in mine as well.
So it's one thing to talk really nice, and you see Democrats, they talk a good talk, but they're not accomplishing much of anything that's going to be of great impact for the black community.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that they go to the trouble of this verbal support and promise and everything and then never follow through? Why is that?
Well, I think it's a number of reasons for that.
I mean, had the first black president. He could have done anything.
And you know what? I say that all the time. He entered the White House with a supermajority in the House and a majority in the Senate. And he could have nerfed on a number of issues that could have positively impacted African Americans. He could have nerfed on a number of issues that were for the benefit of Chicago.
Let me clear something up, because I think this is a truth. Donald Trump has done things that are good for all Americans, no matter what color, whatever creed, whatever. But it affects all Americans. Whether you're black, brown, white, I don't care who it is, you benefit from his policies. So that's what you're saying. He is picking, he's not picking a race. He's just benefiting the entire country.
He's picking America.
Yeah, but I don't disagree with you. I 100% agree with you on that topic, on that point. Here's my point. We talk about throughout all of America, the populations that are mostly marginalized, that have been greatly marginalized by the most. And that has been African Americans. I'm saying that this has been a group of individuals who have been completely and totally abandoned by the Democratic Party and failed liberalism. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, extremely poor, lights, gas, and water off at the same time. Mom addicted to crack cocaine. I've lived in a project. I've seen things that they're worse. I talk about in my book. I saw my mom attempt suicide right before my own very eyes.
Oh, my Lord.
And I got involved in politics at the age of 14 because I was told, by way of my grandfather, who's a small business owner of plumbing construction, we were riding through an area of Chicago called Inglewood one day. And I was 14 years old, and I see this lady who appears to be drugged up and beat down. And I began to tear up because I knew it was my mother. Oh, and as we began to continue to ride by, my grandfather said to me in his very southern voice, "What's wrong with you, boy?" And I said, "This lady, what can I do to prevent this from happening?" At that point, I realized it wasn't my mother. And he tells me about the power elected officials have to create greater penalties for those who sell and distribute drugs and how they can provide grant funding for those who want to be rehabilitated. And I say, I want to be an elected official. So the very next week, I started volunteering for my local alderman's office. At the age of 14, I was there every day after school like it was my job. And at that point, I began to get an inside view of what liberalism really did. In our neighborhood, it was always, Democrats were always spoken of well. Republicans were spoken of in the most negative way that you can imagine. They were called racist. They said they wanted to make sure poor people stayed poor. Those were the different things that I was taught. And that's what I pontificated when I would debate people. Until one day I was on the street having a conversation with an older African-American fellow who was telling me things I never heard before. And he was a Democrat. And he said, "Hey, don't you know that African Americans were mostly Republicans?" I had never heard that before. It was the first time I ever heard that. And I thought he was lying to me, to be honest with you. So I went home, and what I always did back then and what I do now is if someone has something that I can't necessarily debate, I go and research so I can have a stronger point of view for the next debate. And that's what I did. And I saw via Google, I researched the distinctions between the Democrats and Republicans, and I found out the Republican Party was started in 1854 in opposition to the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which wanted to expand slavery. When I saw that every civil rights bill passed was supported by way of Republicans, including the ones that Democrats tried to put up.
Even the civil rights bill. If it weren't for the Republican Senate, the civil rights bill.
1964 civil rights bill.
Correct. Right. Democrats and very few people even know that.
Correct. Democrats they had the majority in the Senate, and they didn't want to support it. So it was Republicans in the Senate which led to its passage. So
wasn't Martin Luther King a Republican?
Yes,
he was a Republican. He absolutely was a Republican.
Yeah.
So when I learned of these things, I couldn't believe it. The ideology of a conservative. I come from a very religious family. Grandfather was a small business owner on my dad's side. You know, low taxes. religious freedoms. I couldn't believe it, and I was very shocked because I had never heard any of it before, and I had to go through this process of depression because I said, oh, no, how can I be one of them when everyone says Republicans are racist? And it didn't matter what color you are. If you were a Republican, you were a racist in the community I grew up in.
Right. So, well, that's still true today.
Well, I don't think as much so as it used to be. I think things have changed. I think a lot of people have woken up to your point.
Well, with Candace Owens and Kanye and people like that advocating and teaching, you may be right. I think the wind is changing.
Gianno, when you're talking about your history lesson, what did you learn about where the KKK came from, where the Black Laws came from, where Jim Crow came from?
All Democratic policies pushed by the Democrats. So I learned that I couldn't believe it. And as a result, I became a conservative and I got involved in a party. And I talk about very hilariously in the book, Taken for Granted, how conservatism can win back the Americans that liberalism failed. I had a scenario of when I finally joined and I went to my first Republican meeting and the conversations I had, and people were shocked. I'm a kid from the south side of Chicago going into DuPage County, which really was a Republican stronghold.
And, right. You're not supposed to be a Republican.
No, not at all. But hey, we're taking it back. 100% we're taking it back. So I get in this Republican meeting and people are kind of whispering like, you know, who is this guy? What is he doing here? And after months of volunteering and being involved, people didn't take to me as well as I thought they should. So I talked to one guy who really liked me and I said, you know, why is it that, you know, kind of people aren't really taking to me in a particular way that I thought they should? And he said, well, Gianno, you know, they were convinced that you were a spy.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's what they would think.
So I'm for the Obama campaign.
So, Chuck, the vision I'm getting is Cleavon Little when he first shows up in town in the movie Blazing.
Right. Yeah. That's right. So they finally accepted you because you proved yourself, right?
Well, I prove myself time and time again, and to be honest with you, I think there's a need to have people like me out there. There's a need for people to take this book, Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed, and buy it as Christmas gifts and give it to people who might feel that they have a conservative leaning or just want to be educated and learn that, you know, a lot of people think that Republicans are just a bunch of wealthy folks and they just have a lot of money. No, that's not how I grew up.
Well, isn't that completely, that's very interesting what you just said. Very interesting what you just said.
Yes, they should buy it as gifts for Christmas.
By the way, Chuck, the average Republican family earns $6,000 less annually than the average Democrat family.
Well, I know, but it's reversed. There was a time when the Republicans were really the Wall Street Republicans. Now they're Wall Street Democrats. That's all completely changed now.
Correct. And
if you look at the billionaires, they're all Democrats. I mean, very few of them are Republicans.
Republicans are working class.
But let's go even further. You think about the Democrats that live in the Appalachian region.
I grew up there. I grew up there, Gianno.
Let me not even say Democrats. The people who live there, the working class, poor people that live in that area. Democrats have completely failed them, too. It's not just African-Americans. And I know a lot of people say, like, you know, they've really failed African-Americans because African-Americans vote over 90%. But these are the people that came into the Trump fold because he was talking about bringing jobs back to our country. People said, oh, that's not true. That can never happen. Manufacturing jobs, they're always gone. Not true. This president has been extraordinarily impactful for all communities, not
that's
just
right.
Black communities, but it's such a big surprise for folks. Because they see a president that's a Republican who's talking about the issues of impact that impact African-Americans. And that we haven't really seen any Republican presidents that have done this in recent times that have
Let me
really
ask you,
stayed on this issue. It gets mentioned here and there.
Let me ask.
He stays on the issue.
Let me ask you a question that you may or may not know the answer to. And I understand if you don't, because it's pretty obscure. Who was the first governor to integrate schools in a state? And what state was it? You talked about Appalachia. I'll give you a clue. It was in Appalachia. So do you know?
Oh, yeah, you're talking to, no, I don't know.
Happy Chandler.
I'm trying to think.
The state of Kentucky, where I come from, we were the first mandated integrated schools, and I was part of that in the 50s.
But that wasn't Arkansas when we think about what
Nope.
You're starting to sound like Kamala Harris now. You're talking about you were in the first class here when they
I was. I was.
Nobody even knows this.
And I was that poor white boy.
That's right. Well,
and now you're a good conservative?
Well, you know, my whole family, where I grew up in Appalachia and Kentucky, northeastern Kentucky, which is very close to Harlem and all those places where people kill each other over whiskey, they were all Democrats. They always voted Democrat. Not that way so much now, but it was a definitely blue state. It's changed.
Here, I've got a question for John. We look at President Trump. We see Whoopi Goldberg, who mm-hmm. loved him, and right. Oprah loved him,
Everybody.
And Al Sharpton loved him,
right.
and Jesse Jackson and loved him. But now they all hate him. Now, it's why did they all love him before, and now they all hate him? Are they claiming that something changed about him? Because if you look at his speeches and his TV interviews going 20, 30 years back, he sounds the exact
yeah,
same.
Yeah, they're all the same. If you look at his Twitter, when he first got on Twitter, he tweets exactly the same.
Right,
the
so same what changed?
Too. Perhaps we want there to be a bit of a change there. But certainly, this it's not popular in Hollywood to be a Republican. I'll tell you a quick story.
Really?
I talk about it in my book. No, seriously.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I really do.
You're talking to a guy who spent 40 years there.
I spent 45 years in Hollywood. I know.
Very popular game show host, right?
Well, at one time.
Right. I think you're still popular now. You're just not in the game show.
Probably persona non grata right now.
He came out of his conservative closet.
Well, listen, so long as you stay out the closet, you're in good shape, I think.
Yeah, but I wasn't when I was in the closet there. I would not dare tell people what I thought. I wouldn't have, I just wouldn't have worked. That's the end of that. So
yeah, I hear that.
It's called survival.
I totally hear that. And Dean Cain is another one. He's totally right. Out, Mr. Superman, but he's out here making moves for the movement.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Dean's yeah. taking a lot of heat.
Well, Clint Eastwood as well. And I mean, there are very few. Most of them are very well established by this point. And, you know, they've made their money, so to speak, and they have the freedom to do it. But there is no freedom in Hollywood for anybody who's conservative no. at all.
You know what? Let me give you a quick story. So I talk about in my book, you know, the different women that I've dated. And when I said, please don't take it that way. Women that I've attempted to date, and just people that I meet in Hollywood. There was one particular woman who I went over to say hello to. I reached out my hand and she says to me, I know who you are. And I'm like, wow, you know who I am. But it was kind of a mean look on her face. And she says, you're that Republican from Fox News. And this happened at a Hollywood party. And you know who that was?
No.
It was Tiffany Haddish.
Well, there
so you
go.
Get a lot of Hollywood types that somehow they know me. I don't know how they know me, but it's not really a popular focus to be a Republican in Hollywood, and I understand that. I think for a
Dude,
lot of
you think you've got it. You think you've
out.
Got it tough being a black Republican? Try just being a white guy right now.
That's right. Period. Not even just a Republican, just white. It's all of a sudden
we're the scourge of society now.
It's crazy. Oh, well, you know, it's become so hyper-partisan, it's nuts. And it was not this hyper-partisan when I was in Hollywood. It was hyper-partisan, but it was kind of under the, you know, radar. Now it's just so out there where Washington and Hollywood are just identical with each other. They're little bubbles where people who talk to each other and agree with each other. And if you're on the outside, then they have nothing to do with you.
It's cities of all know-it-alls and elite people who look down on folks who may not have as much as they have the power and influence.
You know, another thing that I found, Gianna, and maybe you can identify with this. every friend that I had in Hollywood, and I had friends that were, you know, really friends of mine, were all leftists.
And now he's left with me.
I'm not really. I still have some that are there, and I could mention their names, but I won't. But the interesting thing about it, I accept them for whatever they are. I don't really hold it against them, but they don't accept me.
Because you don't hate people.
No, I don't. Hate doesn't build any.
And Republicans in general don't hate people.
Hate never built anything.
Right. And we're not looking to cancel you or come and protest you because we don't want to have a debate either. That doesn't happen.
No, we welcome debate.
I tell you, I don't understand it. If liberals are all about inclusion,
they're
then
not.
Why are they so mean-spirited? You can't even have a conversation. It's about let me shout you down and tell you how wrong you are. And
well, it's just like with the black community.
President Obama has talked about this. When he was president, he talked about it. And after his presidency, he talked about the cancel culture. He said, that's not activism. That's being lazy. And that's what we have, a bunch of lazy folks who are just complaining for nothing.
Well, it's the world
we live
in. Not
everyone, but surely there are a number that are.
So, Chuck, let's take Giano back to Chicago and his childhood for a minute.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in Chicago, and what were the things that happened that got you out of there? And how did the Democratic policies play into your life, or how did they not benefit your life?
That's a very good question. So to dig deep into the book, and I thank you for asking that question. When my mom really needed to get into rehab, my grandmother took temporary custody of us. And she, at the time, was a private duty nurse. And one day she leaves the house and she comes right back. A car had hit her. She had to go to the hospital. Her back was injured. And she could no longer be a private duty nurse. She had to switch her schedule. And then she could no longer work at all. So from that point, we really began to suffer. And that's when things really got truly bad. And what I had to do then is I began to, you know, I was already doing some getting into politics. I started working. I was working for my grandfather for his business. I made $10 a day. And honestly, I had times I would come in from a weekend and spend it in my grandparents' house, and I would have $10. And my grandmother would say to me, you know, how much money did you get? We need to use that for toilet paper. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking. But I knew that I needed to work so I can help benefit my family. And at 16, I started working for the federal government part-time. And I was beginning to make some really good money. But I tell you, this mindset of my grandmother changed. And this is when I saw the trap. This is a liberal trap. I started making some decent money, a little bit above minimum wage. And my grandmother came to me and she said, you might have to quit your job. And I said, why? She's like, you're making so much money, the government probably will cut us off from our benefits. So you mean to tell me that the policy is set up that if I make a little bit above minimum wage, that you're going to cut me off from the benefit? And a lot of people live that life. That's why folks will stay trapped in poverty out of fear of if I go out and take a job and it doesn't work out and they cut me off from my benefits and I'll have no money. I have no, you know, housing. I'll have no food stamps. I'll have none of these things. Versus saying, hey, we're going to let you stay on the system for a little bit as you get on your feet and not penalize you for making a few bucks here and there. But we're going to let you get on your feet and then we'll take you off. That's the way the system should be made. And I think, you know, Newt Gingrich, who endorsed my book, Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the House, that's what they did when they did the 96 welfare reform.
You know, I got news for you, Giano. That didn't happen to black people. I have a perfect story for that. My sister, who was on dependents in Indiana, she got very sick, and my mother had died just recently, like within 2 weeks. And her kids were kind of looking after her to a certain extent. She was on disability and the state, you know, was paying for some things. The federal government was paying for some things. And when my mother died, I sold a house in Kentucky, and it was a substantial amount of money. And I sent half of it to her, and the kids went nuts. They said, do you realize what you've done? I said, yeah, I just gave your mother half of the inheritance that I got as well. It's, she deserves it. Well, the problem is she can't get any benefits now. Exactly your story.
Yeah.
Now also,
and it is a trap to keep people dependent.
Now talking exactly. Now in addition to this trap, and I agree with you, these liberal policies have been designed to keep people, and I would say they feed people just enough money to keep them alive, but not enough money to experience freedom.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then they pass a rule saying that you can't have the father, the husband in the house.
You're hitting all the right tones.
And I think that destroyed the black family. When you look at rates, and I don't know, Chuck, we've talked about this before. When you look at marriage rates for the black community versus the white community pre-1963, it was the same percentage of two-parent households, either white or black. And it was the Great Society and the welfare reform of 1963 or 64, whenever that went into play, that destroyed the black family. The Democrats, I believe, deliberately destroyed the black family.
100%. 100%. And if you can create a system that you're going to have a voter base that's going to continue to need you because you got one party that's talking about self-reliance and independence, conservatism. And you got another party that's talking about, we're going to help you, but we're going to, if you're going to get our welfare benefits, if you have somebody that went to jail, and if we're going to further it, let's take it to the 90s. You talk about the 94 crime bill pushed by both Clintons, Hillary and Bill, sponsored by Joe Biden, who was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House. You created a system which sent a lot of people to jail for having things like a dime or a dime bag or a marijuana. And they couldn't go back to, if they had public housing, they couldn't go back into those environments. You created a system where the foundation of the family is non-existent. Now you have individuals, you have women who are working their hearts out, and, you know, they can never be in a situation with a man to really support the family. So then you got the kids, say, for example, in Chicago, which is where I'm from, the kids are running wild. They're in the streets. They're committing crimes. The violence is high and systemic. If you look at the numbers, up until, maybe a week ago, there was over 2,400 people shot in Chicago. And the liberal politicians are saying, oh, we have a reduction. A reduction for who? Like, I don't understand it.
Tell that to the 2,400 people. But they claim that the problem in Chicago is guns from Indiana. There's crime in Chicago.
Listen. We've had the most comprehensive gun control laws on the books in Chicago and the city of Chicago, and you still have crime going out of control. There was a Democrat, an older gentleman, who, with the support of the NRA, sued the city of Chicago so he can have a handgun because he was in fear of his life. He was a senior citizen gentleman. He was in fear of his life. He didn't want anyone to try to kill him. He thought that the criminals had guns and he had no way of defending himself. He took the case all the way to the Supreme Court. As McDonald versus the city of Chicago is a Supreme Court case. And that allowed for individuals across the country to now have handguns and rebuke the liberal policies that had handicapped people, especially in Chicago, Baltimore, and D.C., from being able to protect themselves. There's no place that I can find that liberal policies actually benefited America. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know where that place exists.
If you look,
and
if you look
at, I can't find where it's benefited African Americans.
You know, go ahead, Mark. I
was going to say, if you look at Chicago gun laws, they are a may issue state and city, which means you have to pay an enormous fee. It's like a $500 application fee to get a gun permit. Then you go before a gun board. A review of the Democrat-run gun board shows that the gun board never approves black people for guns. They only approve white people.
Wow.
So let me ask you.
This is where we need to start the protest.
Let me ask you something that I'm curious about. I've met Jesse Jackson. I don't know him, but I've met him. I've never met Al Sharpton. But these voices of the African American community.
If you did, you'd have no idea what he was saying anyways.
Well, perhaps you're right. But these are loud. These are loud voices and people who are followed by millions in the African American community. So why is that? What is the appeal of these kinds of men who speak the way they speak, who do the things they do, and yet never accomplish anything? How do they do it?
And they're both reverends, keep in mind.
Yeah, but they're not alone. There are other people like that, but they're probably the most prominent. How do they do that, Gianna?
You know what's interesting? I tell a story in my book, Take It for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans Liberalism Failed. My grandfather, very proud man, back in, I think it was maybe the 80s or 90s at some point, he was listening to Jesse Jackson, and Jesse told, you know, folks, hey, if you feel like you're black and the mortgage company has cheated you, because, you know, the mortgage company were cheating folks and giving different rates to African-Americans than there were white Americans. And we have data to support that. And he said, Jesse told him to bring down your mortgage note. We're going to talk about it and we're going to get this thing fixed. My grandfather went down there to this meeting. And he was waiting for them to get to this conversation on the mortgage note, but it never happened. According to him, Jesse just wanted donations. So he used this issue to get a big crowd and then focused on donations versus tackling the issue. And we've seen that time and time again with Al Sharpton. We've seen it with Jesse Jackson, where there can be a company that actually does something wrong. And they'll get together to protest, and the company buys them off. I've seen that actually with pastors in the city of Chicago.
So you're saying
they
guys like Jackson,
Democratic politicians.
You're saying these guys know how to exploit their own people.
Yeah, they do it well. I mean, how many politicians have you seen at a Catholic mass? You don't see them in a Catholic mass. They come in and they come into these churches in Chicago, these politicians, and they come in and they do a whole sermon and tell them to vote for them, this, that, and the other, and they bash whatever Republican they want. And then they leave. And what do the pastors get out of it? Sometimes they get, you know, grant funding for their churches. They get all kind of benefits. At one time, they were giving free water to churches. That's what they would get. So they wouldn't have a water bill. This stuff is disgraceful. And I'm calling it out in this book because it's something needs to change and people need to wake up to what the liberal movement has done. You even see even now, they don't even address black issues anymore. What they're addressing is issues right now, and it is nothing wrong with folks who weren't born in this country. You know, I'm all about, you know, I'm in support of immigrants. But at the same time, you come into this country the right way, through the front door. But now they're looking to acquiesce. They're creating policies that they can get this community, whether you be Hispanic or not. And Hispanics don't all vote for Democrats. Let's be honest. I think they voted 30% for Donald Trump, over 30%. But they're trying to create a reality that they can get the kind of numbers that they're getting in the black community. If you have African-Americans voting over 90% and you get Hispanics doing that, you don't have to do anything for anyone. You win every time.
Mm-hmm. So Gianna, you bring up a really good point here. And so when we're the Democrats and Chuck and Gianna's, you know, we're older than you are. The Democrats for years, Chuck, ran on helping the poor and helping African-Americans. You notice that you don't hear much of that happening right now. They seem to have abandoned Americans, and now their focus is on illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gianna, why would the Democrats want to attach themselves to illegal aliens who aren't even legally able to vote, instead of Americans?
Well, because you have a change in the demographic. I believe it's about 2035. I could be wrong on that number, but this is going to be a majority Hispanic country fairly soon. So why not grab on to this new power base of individuals? And if, you know, maybe the mom or dad came in illegally, but maybe the daughter and son are here legal. Maybe they had them here.
So you're saying they're playing the long game here? That they're really playing the long game?
Yeah, who would have thought, right? They're playing the long game, but they played the long game with the African-American community, too. You think about LBJ, The reason for him even focusing on civil rights is because he said he wanted to keep black folks voting, or he used another word. He didn't say black folks.
That's right. He certainly did use another word, didn't he?
He used the N-word. He said he wanted to keep them voting Democrat for 50 years. And he was right. He ultimately, he was correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible racist.
So if you create a new strategy, this is what you get. This is the result. You get power. And that's why, in my opinion, the focus is on this group of voters, or people, rather.
So let's turn your attention to the impeachment hearings going on at the moment. What do you think? What is your opinion of what's going on? I'm sure I know what your opinion is, but what do you think is going to be the outcome of what's going on?
Here, I can sum it up for you. Read the transcript. Read the transcript.
Now, wait a minute. Joy Reid, AM Joy, told people she'd get a whole session this week on how to survive Thanksgiving dinner with your crazy Republican Uncle Roscoe. Now, I don't have an Uncle Roscoe.
Roscoe.
Do you have an Uncle Roscoe, that's Chuck?
Funny. No, I don't.
No,
have
No, I actually don't have a Roscoe. I don't have a cousin.
Okay, so she did this show on how to survive Thanksgiving dinner with your Uncle Roscoe when between stuffing turkey and pumpkin pie in his mouth, he's going to be garbling out the words, read the transcript.
You know what? I can tell her how to survive Thanksgiving dinner with Uncle Roscoe. Give him a book called Taken for Granted, and he'll learn something new. Get another copy for Christmas, and you know, that would change the trajectory of things. I got to be honest with you. I think most folks in the media, the very liberal media, believe that the American people aren't smart enough to read for themselves. So they give them their interpretation of what the transcript is, and they think enough people will be deceived to say, oh, well, President Trump absolutely did something wrong and he should be impeached. The numbers have changed. We got to be honest. You know, a media jumping down on this issue has changed some numbers. But as President Trump continues to say that he's going to be a transparent president and he's going to release this second transcript, I think that changes the dynamic. And the unfairness of the impeachment hearings, what we've seen, where Republicans can't call particular witnesses, Democrats, Adam Schiff is saying, hey, you're not going to be able to call this witness. The Trump lawyers can't get involved in the hearing. This level of unfairness, people can see through that. And the more that we have these televised hearings on television, I think people will really understand that this thing, although I'm all for it, certainly making sure our elected officials are held to account. But this issue right here is, for a lot of people, a witch hunt.
You know, Mark said something at the beginning of the show that before you came on, Gianno, and I really never thought of this, but he said he really thinks that it will come right up to the wire and then Democrats will not impeach in the House because they don't want a trial in the Senate to be exposed for what they are. And they'll just leave this dirty laundry hanging.
Well, I think the effort from the very beginning was to keep a cloud over President Trump's head. I may not agree with everything he does and says, and when I disagree, I speak up on the most powerful news channel in the country. So I'm thankful to have that opportunity and for it to be heard, because I know a lot of times he's watching. But the truth be told, they've been looking to hold a cloud over his head for a very long time. People often forget that Hillary Clinton, when she ran in 2016, she was under FBI investigation. They shouted down about that the whole go, talking about evidence, et cetera, et cetera. But with this president, you don't have evidence. You talk about the Russia collusion. We had an entire investigation into Russia. There was nothing. There was no collusion. So they want to keep a campaign issue going because they don't have anything to truly run on.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. They surely don't want to deep dive into Ukraine. I guarantee you that.
And that's what a Senate trial would do.
But we're still going to see some hearings. I think we're going to still see some hearings from the Judiciary Committee over there on the Senate side. And I think that they will be exposed even before it would become a trial in the Senate. But the truth of the matter is what their goal is, because they don't have anything to run on. They're talking about giving health care to people who aren't even a part of the, you know, members of this country, residents in this country.
That is just amazing to me that they have the guts to do that.
Talking about.
Well, the Democrats are now denying that that any of them said that.
Well, they all raised their hands.
And they're all saying, and they're
be wrong. We all saw it.
No. They're all claiming that the hand raising was the Mandela effect. It never actually happened.
Oh, okay.
They're literally claiming that they didn't say that.
It's laughable at this point.
It is laughable.
But that's what you got. They don't have anything to run on, so they rather run on Trump is a crook and he's corrupt and he's a bad president, so bring me in instead. And I'm going to raise your taxes good. So I just don't know where they're going.
The roof. I mean, you look at what Elizabeth Warren is proposing or Bernie Sanders. It's unfundable. It's a mathematical impossibility.
To me, Gino, this is just amazing that they will come up with these trillions of dollars over 10 years of Green New Deal, forgiving all students for their student loans, which they set up to begin with, and then Medicare for All, which is trillions of dollars, and they pass this off on American people like, oh, it's okay, we got the money for that, don't worry about it. We couldn't begin to afford this stuff.
Oh, just have to tax the rich, Chuck.
That wouldn't do it either, though.
Of course not. If you actually confiscated all of the money that the 1% owns, I mean, took us down to zero, you'd only pay the federal budget for what is like 4 months or 5 months.
You know, Gianna, one of the biggest scams I think that the Democrats run always is they're always talking about taxing the rich. But when they say we're taxing the rich, they really mean they're taxing the middle class. But they never say it and they deny it. But it always happens.
You have to.
It really does. Yeah. And me being from Chicago, I've seen the Democrats tax scam work time and time again. Oh, they work it over on people. Or they, you know, create new fees for this, that, and the other. And I'm telling you, it pretty much gives you anxiety because you're like, oh, no, what tax am I going to get now?
And then they talk
make sure
about
that you're working for a living for them, working for the government, not for your family. Right. And this is another reason why I believe in freedom. And I believe the conservative movement is the best offering of that.
You look at Bernie Sanders. He's claiming that President Trump is the great divider. He's dividing us. What could be more divisive than Bernie Sanders constantly telling people that they should be hating successful people and that we should be practicing class envy?
Correct. And the Democrats have become all about dividing the country. And that's why you see it in polls, which show that those that talked all about, you know, they didn't have a policy perspective or really a platform to stand on, to those who just talk about Trump, voters, especially independents, they disagree with that. They hate to see that coming. They want to see policy that's going to benefit them. They want to talk about health care. Those are the issues that they want to talk about. And at this particular point, Democrats aren't offering that. They're offering impeachment. They're offering higher taxes. They're offering an economy which would actually be in shambles if we were to change the forward trajectory of it now. That's what they want to see.
You know what,
and
I find
problematic.
I'll tell you what I find very interesting, and I can accuse myself of this as well. We're always talking about
yourself.
Well, I do. I mean, we're always talking about Saul Alinsky and blah 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 and the Marxist and this. Forget all that stuff. They go back to when I was born. 75 years ago, and they really are picked up on Goebbels. I mean, they keep saying that Trump is a Nazi and all this kind of stuff, when in fact the playbook that they use is a fascist Nazi Goebbels playbook under Hitler, and they use it over and over again. And I just don't think people are aware of history and what the Nazis were all about and the individuals that ran the Nazi Party. And I mean, it's just amazing to me how people gobble this stuff up and never pay attention to history and the methodology the Democrats use, which is exactly right out of the playbook of Goebbels.
You know what? Interestingly enough, and you started off the conversation with it in a way, what happened when Trump was, you know, in Hollywood and he was popular among the rappers and, you know, the actors and everybody wanted to spend time with Trump. It's clear, once you become a Republican, the labels remain the same. You can be the most beloved figure. But when you become a Republican, for a lot of folks, you become a racist. That's what they consider most conservatives. And they've been winning on that message when it comes to
African-Americans. I've been called a racist, you know, ad infinitum.
And I'm sure you have.
Yeah, it never quits.
But here's the thing. People are waking up to it. They know that liberals don't have their best interests at heart. Like we talk about, you know, the Appalachian region and those folks who Democrats have completely thrown away, to be honest with you. They've completely thrown them away.
Well, folks, the book
now
is...
Now we have a president that is changing the dynamic.
The book is Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. Gianna, where can people find the book at?
Anywhere, any major retailer where books are sold. I encourage people to follow me on social media at Gianna Caldwell, G-I-A-N-N-O, Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L.
Thank okay, Gianna, I got a question for you. Who named you?
Actually,
who named you Gianna? Because you sound like you run a pizza place on the south side of Chicago.
Listen, I make some of the best catfish you can ever find in the country. So not necessarily pizza, but I'm thankful. I got a good name. And to be honest with you, my birth name is Gianni, G-I-A-N-N-I. And my parents changed it several days after my birth to Gianna. They thought that Gianna was much more macho, masculine.
But I
love my name, and I'm thankful for it.
So it's a great name.
Great catfish, fried catfish. Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, folks, go to bluntforcetruth.com. Look for the episode with Gianna Caldwell. There you'll find links for his social media and links to the book and to all of his different places to get in touch with him.
What a great guest you are, Gianna. We really appreciate you coming on the show. You're a breath of fresh air, and we enjoyed it. You're welcome back anytime you want to come on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. Leave us a good review on Twitter, on iTunes. You can catch us there. You can catch us on Podcast One. And thanks for listening to the show. We'll see you next time on Blunt Force Truth.